Hello everyone. From Glemon Partners from Nuveen, this is Glemon Insights. Here, we discuss all things about energy transition, from policy to technology. With assets in multiple geographies and nearly 4 billion euro asset under management, we are one of Europe's largest fund managers, focusing exclusively on investments in clean energy infrastructure. To find out more about us, visit www.glemon.com. And don't forget the double N. Green hydrogen is produced starting from renewable generation sources, that's widely known. But how can we best achieve this, and which are the renewable technologies and scenarios that are best suited to produce hydrogen for the future of the planet? I am Manuel Gallio, Principal Asset Engineer at Glemon Partners from Nuveen, and I'm very pleased to be here in London today, together with Helena Anderson and Sandra Lees, who are the founder of Ikigai and the director of legal of Vattenfall. So we have two interesting real case studies showing that hydrogen projects are possible, but also financially attractive. So let me introduce our guest today. Sandra Lees is the director of legal at the Swedish energy company Vattenfall. She leads the legal team in the UK to develop on and offshore wind farms, battery storage, solar, low carbon heat and electricity networks, and is now looking at offshore hydrogen production, which we will discuss later. She also has recently been recognized nothing less than as one of the top 100 energy lawyers in the world. So congratulations, Sandra.
Thank you.
Yay!
Helena Anderson is a founder of Ikigai, that was founded in 2017, and today is the fifth anniversary. So happy birthday. Happy birthday, Ikigai.
Thank you.
And in the previous 2 years, she worked at the UK Department for International Trade, where she was head of energy capital investment, responsible for shaping government policy aligned, private sector-led energy and integrated energy, transport and regeneration projects, businesses and technologies such that they became bankable and attracting international investments into those opportunities. Prior to that, Helena had 10 years' experience as a project finance lawyer, advising on renewables, oil and gas, telecoms, and infrastructure in EMEA. And she was recognized by Liga 500 in 2016 as a leading lawyer in renewable energy projects and as an industry expert in managing environmental and social risks lending under the Equator Principle and ESG generally. So congratulations to Helena too.
Thank you.
So I think I need to grab the opportunity to get your autographs later on after the podcast. So hydrogen has been the topic of our last Glemon Insight podcast, giving us a very interesting overview of the hydrogen world. Thanks to my colleague Fabian for the insightful conversation. But today we will expand on the topic, talking about two real case studies of hydrogen production linked to offshore technology and the Thames Estuary project Helena will talk about a bit later, and on why hydrogen represents an opportunity where Glemon can deliver more value to its investors by enhancing project performance. So Sandra, Helena, welcome to the podcast, and I'm very grateful to have you both here in person.
Thank you.
And thanks again for the availability. So can I ask you both to give an overview of Ikigai and Vattenfall and your roles in?
Yeah, shall I go first?
Please.
Thanks. So Vattenfall is a Swedish energy company. It's been around for over 100 years, so a little longer than Ikigai, but Ikigai will get there soon. So for those of you who don't speak Swedish, Vattenfall means waterfall, as it started as a hydroelectric company. It's now one of Europe's largest producers and retailers of electricity and heat, and our vision is to enable fossil-free living within a generation. And in order to do so, we are looking beyond our own industry to see where we can really make a difference. So together with our partners, we're taking on the responsibility to find new and sustainable ways to electrify transportation, industries and heating. We are a European leader in the development, operation and maintenance of offshore wind farms with more than 2 gigawatts in operation, which for the geeks out there is enough to power more than 1.6 million homes. 1.5 gigawatts are under construction, and we've got an ambition to install a further 15 gigawatts by 2030. So this leads us nicely on to the development of offshore hydrogen. And I should also let listeners know that Helen and I have known each other for a long time. over 10 years ago when we worked together, and now we've become good friends. So it's really, really nice that we're recording this together. My first podcast, maybe my last, we'll see how it goes, as we haven't worked together.
It'll be the first of many.
Thank you. Because, we haven't worked together for a number of years, so it's great to be here.
But don't be scared if we tease each other during this podcast.
No, please, please do that.
Should I explain a little bit about Ikigai?
Of course.
Okay, so Ikigai is a net zero bankability advisor, and what we focus on is the decarbonisation of core infrastructure and real estate portfolios. And so by core infrastructure, I think it's very relevant to Naveen's clients in the sense that we focus on airports, ports, water, waste, and logistics. And obviously a lot of that comes together in industrial real estate. And we do that in three ways. We do strategic advisory work, mainly for operators and investors in those sectors. We run a co-development arm. So we're sort of a consulting co-developer, if you like, where we actually seek to partner with our clients to deliver energy transition projects. And what came out of those two things was a need to also focus on the tech. So to pull forward the technologies that were the solutions to decarbonisation of those sectors, where they were already, the technologies were proven, but they weren't yet commercially scaled. And so we support tech companies to be ready for deployment in core infrastructure. And so our involvement in the hydrogen sector is manifold. We are currently, as you mentioned, working for the government side of the equation. So I'll talk a little bit about the Thames Estuary work later, which is basically looking at a hydrogen ecosystem for the southeast of England. We also work in the northwest on decarbonisation of a big industrial zone in the northwest, which has hydrogen components to it. But the vast majority of work is with the private sector, looking at how to structure bankable hydrogen projects across a variety of different hydrogen applications.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you, Elena. So I'm sure you realise that we have two very high profiles in the renewable sectors, and they will entertain us with two or three interesting case studies. And by the way, I know you cannot see where we are now, but on the table there's a few Baci di Dama cookies that Elena has kindly prepared for us. She baked them last night, actually. So thank you. So we can sweeten the atmosphere with those.
Yes. You're giving people the impression that I can cook. I cannot cook. All I can do is Baci di Dama.
Well,
but they're here for a very specific reason, right? One, I believe they originated in your hometown.
Yes, there's a few interpretations about that, but these cookies basically come from a sort of legend that ladies back then used to prepare these type of cookies, and they took that name because that shape reminds a bit of the lips.
So, well, it's very lucky comes today, Manuel. You have two ladies here. One of whom is addicted to Baci di Dama, right, Sandra?
Mm-hmm. It's the only reason I've turned up today.
It's totally the case. And the other reason is that they're a great analogy for the challenges in the hydrogen sector, because it's all about matching the two sides of the cookie, supply and demand. So
fantastic.
There's my 2 cents worth on the needs of the hydrogen sector.
Nobody can see this, but I'm shaking my head at this point.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm sure there will be a lot of learnings from the cookies. To set the scenes on hydrogen, although I'm sure that the most of you already know, there's a rainbow of hydrogen production types, each one with its own color. The most common is the gray hydrogen produced from fossil fuels. And the blue hydrogen is produced from the natural gas. And what we're talking about today is the green hydrogen from renewable electricity. I can assure you it's a bit hard to refrain from eating the cookies, but what is the right recipe then for a well-integrated hydrogen project, Elena? You have a super exciting project, the Thames Estuary, and Ikigai is leading towards realization.
Yeah, well, maybe if I start by just explaining what it is that we're seeking to achieve on that project. So we were appointed about a year and a half ago by the Thames Estuary Growth Board, which is a regional development body. Years ago, we would have called it the beginnings of a development corporation, and it represents 19 local authorities in the estuary, which is, if you stand out at St. Paul's and you look east, that's the estuary. And we identified with them that there was a particular advantage to looking at hydrogen in the estuary compared to other parts of the UK or other parts of Europe, actually. And that's because, unlike the north, which is much more focused on industrial applications of hydrogen, so high temperature heat usage and displacement of natural gas, what's unique about the estuary is that it has much more transport and connectivity, distribution and logistics applications of hydrogen. And so the first thing that we did on the project is we did a sources and uses analysis of the estuary, because we knew from the beginning if we were going to attract investment, particularly institutional investment, in search of long-term stable cash flows into a sector that is still relatively nascent in terms of the use of hydrogen, let alone the production, the distribution, the storage, all the components of an ecosystem that we have to accept don't exist for hydrogen. So if you come from the solar world and you sort of expect the ability to export power to the grid, well, the distribution infrastructure for hydrogen doesn't exist right now. So you're making a whole ecosystem. So we knew we had to start with the demand. And so by doing the sources and uses analysis, we looked at the optimal applications of hydrogen from a demand perspective. And the first thing you have to recognize, to follow the cooking and food metaphor, hydrogen's like champagne. You can use it for a lot of different applications, but it's super expensive. So maybe you don't want to have it for breakfast, maybe you just want to have it at the wedding. So therefore, we don't see hydrogen as a panacea. We look at where it is really the most flexible alternative to whatever the fossil fuel usage is right now. So I mentioned high temperature heat, but in the world of transport and connectivity, you're looking at heavy goods vehicles, long distance buses, or buses that are operating in an environment where we need a lot of power, for example, in the motorways. You're looking at aviation, particularly regional aviation. Monofuel hydrogen aircraft are moving now from gaseous to liquid hydrogen as a usage, and that is becoming a commercial reality in the next couple of years. Maritime, both river uses, potentially ferry uses in a dual fuel scenario, and international shipping. So these are all contexts where it's actually very difficult to replace the fossil fuel alternative. And the estuary has that in spades. And so starting with that demand, we're now looking at different forms of supply, both the carrier of the hydrogen, so different forms of hydrogen, ammonia, gaseous, liquid, inert forms of hydrogen carrier, and understanding how we might effectively distribute either from offshore sources, that could be offshore wind locally, or it could be from large-scale production elsewhere in the country, or from overseas where the marginal cost of production is lower, or from local supply. But we recognise the estuary is going to be a net importer because we just simply don't have the land at the valuation that you would need to make hydrogen economic at high-scale production. So we did that sources and uses analysis, and now we've moved on to actually shaping individual production, supply, storage and distribution projects, working with the gas network operators, working with private sector developers to crowd in investment, and also to crowd investment into hydrogen tech of the future through an initiative we call Living Labs, which is all about targeting the central need in the growth of technology and manufacturing of hydrogen technology in this country, which is post an idea, pre-commercialization, where you need prototyping and testing and micro-manufacturing here. So we are delivering Living Labs across the estuary to try and bring forward that technology for the future. So a combination of infrastructure and tech. So right at the coalface, to use an inappropriate metaphor, of how to deliver hydrogen on a regional level.
Fantastic. That's very interesting, Ellen. And I think you got on a key point, which is the demand for hydrogen. In Lemon, we are looking at potential opportunities for hydrogen production, but clearly the starting point has to be an hydrogen offtake possibility and the term of that, which will then allow to shape an hydrogen production project together with renewable plants.
Yeah, I mean, to just build on that, because I think it's really important for listeners to understand that if we know that investors are looking for long-term contracted cash flows, we have to do that through a combination of understanding which demand you can pull forward early and to combine that demand now with other demand that might come forward later. So You're bringing forward the cash flow in order to deliver the hydrogen long term.
Very clear. Very clear. Thank you. So we are also in Englemont developing a PV portfolio in South of Europe, the Beyond Net Zero IPP, and we are also looking at potential opportunities to couple with hydrogen production. Sandra, Vattenfall has developed and started to build a pilot project in Scotland and close to the Aberdeen offshore wind farm. So I'd love to hear more. Can you give us more details about that?
It's super, super early stage, actually. So we haven't quite started to build it, but hopefully soon. But I think just taking a little step back, I think we just must acknowledge that rarely in recent time, actually, has the energy transition been quite as prominent as it has been at the moment in mainstream media. So energy security is obviously at the fore, affordability, as Helena said, decarbonisation generally, are all really in the press basically every day. Hydrogen plays an important role in this to support the energy transition. And as you say about net zero, we need to meet the targets that the UK government has set. So for Vattenfall, we're looking at the rainbow, obviously, of colours, and have selected green for our hydrogen, and in particular, offshore hydrogen production using seawater, because we've got an offshore wind farm and it's in the sea, so it makes sense to use the seawater there. To do that, and actually going back to recipes, because I haven't made anything and I haven't brought any snacks with me today, so sorry about that, but I can tell you about the recipe for hydrogen.
Please do.
So the first stage is to desalinate the water and to produce water pure enough to create the hydrogen, and that's what's really important, actually having pure hydrogen. And we do that through the desalination plant and then create the hydrogen using electrolysis. And so to match the output of the wind turbine, there's going to be parallel stacks of electrolyzers. So they can then be really flexible and can respond to the variable wind conditions on a second-by-second basis. So for Aberdeen, as you know, is a city that's synonymous with oil and gas production, North Sea transition at the moment, including the Crown Estate's Intog leasing ground for more wind farms. So Aberdeen seemed like an ideal location for hydrogen turbine.
Fantastic. So this seems to fit nicely then with the R&D element of your offshore wind farm.
You're right. So our Aberdeen Bay offshore wind farm was constructed as a test and demonstration wind farm. It's been operational since 2018 now. And since then, a number of gadgets, and apologies to all engineers out there, I don't know the proper terms of all the gadgets, but let's just go with gadgets. They have been tested at the site. However, the largest scale of which is going to be this hydrogen production project. So the wind farm was chosen mostly because it's Aberdeen and the oil and gas element, and also it's the closest to shore of all of our offshore wind farms in the UK. So it's really convenient for installation, operation, maintenance, and obviously shorter transmission of the hydrogen to get to the shore.
And you can also see it from Aberdeen Airport, who we advise.
You can.
So, and as you may be doing deals already at a podcast, we should be talking about how you use the hydrogen.
Could be another value.
It's true. And actually, yeah, you can just stand on the shoreline in Aberdeen and look out and see the beautiful turbines, which is, yeah, you just feel proud when you go out and see it. So as I said earlier, we've got a vision of creating, enabling fossil-free living within a generation. It's just kind of like rolls off the tongue now, but we've had this vision since 2016, before a lot of people wanted to get rid of fossil fuels. So we were kind of leading in that and, yeah, continue to do so. This is going to be a first-of-a-kind hydrogen demonstrator, and it's called Hydrogen Turbine 1, HT1, as we call it. Not the best of names, really. I think we should have called it something a little bit more catchy. But it will be the first project in the world, actually, to test the full integration of hydrogen production with a offshore wind turbine. So the pilot, not yet constructed, is a really important step towards game-changing offshore green hydrogen generation, helping to deliver the experience for regulators, the sector generally, and also local communities, which is envisaged within the Scottish and UK government strategies. The project has also been awarded very nicely, 9.3 million in innovation funding from BEIS, and it's going to produce enough hydrogen every day to power a hydrogen bus to travel 15,000 miles. So it's going to go a long way, really.
Wow.
Yep.
So, and isn't Aberdeen the only city in the UK that's got its own hydrogen bus network?
Yes, right? It is. And others are looking at it, actually, which is really cool for Aberdeen and obviously another reason why we chose it. It's the R&D project, this. So everything that I say today is only valid today. So unless you listen to this podcast today, yeah, things may change for tomorrow.
That's very interesting. But then can you explain more then about the proposed concept? So is there the electrolyzer integrated in the turbine?
Yes and no. So the offshore turbines are on a jacket foundation. And then there's going to be another little big platform around that.
Nearby. Okay.
Actually on the jacket foundation. Okay. So attached to it. Okay. And then that will have all the hydrogen producing equipment on it. So the desalination plant, the power conversion, the electrolyzer, and any other bits of equipment.
Any other gadget.
That is going to be needed. But it's going to be looking at real-time response to the variable power source from the turbine itself. We want to obviously look at how it can produce safely at low cost. Cost is obviously hugely important when it comes to hydrogen production, certainly when compared with the other rainbows of hydrogen production. And then really what needs to be done to speed up the regulatory process and enable, yeah, large-scale commercial production a little bit more quickly.
Wow, that's super exciting. And I think having a series of those turbines that can produce hydrogen directly there on the foundation will probably also decrease the capex.
Yeah, it should do, because we've already got the foundations in place. And, you know, as I'm sure you know, a largest part of anything is actually the construction capex costs anyway. So, yeah, the wind turbine, again, apologies to all technicians out there, the power electronics need to be modified to enable a direct current to the electrolyzer to allow the hydrogen to be produced. So, yeah.
Of course.
And presumably the power for the desal is also...
Yeah, yeah, it's all within the turbine. Yeah.
Integrated system.
Yeah, just
so. So it's at least being an engineer myself is typical to focus on the technological and
now
also
you tell me.
commercial aspect.
Sorry, that's so excited with all these.
but of course, this is not, which is very important, but then the developers have to face and to meet with the reality of the regulations and the local communities and so forth. So what have been, Helena, the main hardles for you in the Thames Estuary project?
Where do we start? I would like Sandra to come back on that as well, though, if that's okay, mm-hmm. because I know that you probably are more engaged on a individual consumer level in the way that local communities are engaging with the challenges around hydrogen. I spend my days talking to regulators, so I'm a little further away from the coalface. So one of the things that we recognised very early on in the Thames Estuary project is that it was necessary to bring together a number of different regulators in order to be able to deal with the challenge, particularly of hydrogen storage. So a lot of the HSE challenges that come out of storing hydrogen in large quantities rather than producing hydrogen per se. And we also needed to bring together the various gas network operators who had to date been focusing very much on domestic use of hydrogen in the network rather than what we wanted to focus on, which was distribution for large-scale industrial use and use in transport applications. And so two of the work streams that we are delivering within that project are bringing together the regulators for land, the integration between land and water, so both the river and the coastal environment, and regulation of the waterways within the estuary. So that's the Health and Safety Executive, the Maritime and Coast Guards Agency, the Environment Agency, the Port of London Authority, very important for the southeast, and amongst others. And we then connected into the working groups that are being set up by BEIS, the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy in the UK government, as well as the Department of Transport, who is actually, and listeners may not know this because I don't think it's actually very widely publicised, but the UK government is setting up a national working group to understand what is required in terms of hydrogen regulation. But once you start working in the industry, you realize that a lot of the challenges are local. They are geographical. They are about things that you don't think about, like water-stressed areas. And if you're doing electrolysis, access to water is a major issue. If you're trying to build a 200 megawatt electrolyzer, you know, massive scale to try and deliver enough for, say, Tate and Lyle, the big sugar manufacturer in Thames and Estuary, then you're using maybe a megaliter of water a day. If you're getting that from potable sources within a water scarce area, that's quite a challenge. So looking at ways of managing that issue all dovetails into the regulatory discussions. Anyway, BEIS is trying to bring together the various stakeholders nationally. And what we're doing is feeding in the discussions we're having with these regulators about specific transactions, specific projects. What are the challenges being faced by developers every day across these different production, storage, distribution and applications, and trying to identify and resolve the gaps, I suppose, which we know is such a major barrier to seeing projects go forward. And that's been quite effective. And the other thing we've done is join forces with SGN, National Grid and Cadent as part of their Capital Hydrogen project. Capital Hydrogen is a project to look at six different areas of London and Greater London to deliver hydrogen, particularly to domestic consumers, but more broadly than that in our area. And so the Thames Estuary is one of the six, specifically focusing in the area around East London, Dagenham, around City Airport, if people know that area. And so we, with our client, Thames Estuary Growth Board, are working with them to understand where the larger scale sources of production could come from to move up to supply those predominantly industrial consumers, as well as City Airport in that. So collaboration is, you know, if you take one thing away from this, collaboration, particularly at this stage of the industry, is so critical. And understanding, not in theory, not in the abstract, what regulation needs to do and gaps it needs to fill, but actually looking at specific scenarios where people are in the planning process or they're trying to do the design of their overall solution, and they're hitting roadblocks. And the other thing we have to recognize, that often when we're delivering hydrogen, we're not delivering hydrogen on its own as a fuel. We're delivering a multi-fuel solution often. So when it comes to actually the distribution and retailing of these fuels, particularly in the transport sector, you might have hydrogen sitting alongside biomethane, sitting alongside HVO, and you have to understand how that whole system is going to be regulated if you're going to take that project forward. And it's those projects that are likely to be most bankable. So therefore, they're the ones we need to prioritise and understand how to deliver them from a regulatory perspective, not just a financial and technical perspective.
Exactly. No, that's super interesting also, because often these elements are underestimated and they can become showstoppers. So thank you, Elena. And we came to the end of the first part of this episode of Lemons Inside. We hope you have enjoyed it. But we will be back soon with the second part to zoom into the HD1 project, and also for an interesting debate on the question, are hydrogen projects better be large or small in these initial years? So be sure to follow us and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. A big thank you to our guests Helena Anderson and Sandra Lees for joining us today. And thank you for listening. Until next time.